One of the world's great minds recently said, if the world has not approached its end, it has reached a major watershed in history, equal in importance to the turn from the Middle Age to the Middle Ages to the Renaissance. It will demand from us a spiritual blaze. We shall have to rise to a new height of vision, to a new level of life, where our physical nature will not be cursed as in the Middle Ages. But even more importantly, our spiritual being will not be trampled upon as in the modern era. Those words were spoken to the graduating class at Harvard by Alexander Solzhenitsyn in 1978. Then, as now, it felt like the world was becoming something it hadn't been before. Like somehow we had passed a point where the things we always thought we could rely on were no longer secure. I would submit that one example of a time when that seemed to become devastatingly clearer was just a few years ago when the American Nazis and other white supremacists held a large rally in Charlottesville. Within the panoply of tragedies and the appalling displays that took place at that time, there was a small occurrence that, in retrospect, seems to me like it might have been something like a John 1:5 moment. You know, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There were members of a white nationalist group assembled behind a fence, obviously being separated from a portion of street right in front of them. They were carrying shields and placards and a flag of their organization, and they were shouting a threatening message at an assemblage of people who were out there on the street, which was, on the street, an interracial gathering that included clergy of various denominations, and I think maybe various faiths, in their robes and stoles and clergy collars and whatnot. A chant had reemerged at that event, at the overall event, that anybody who remembers the history of Nazi Germany heard with a shudder. Jews will not replace us. Here at this spot, the white nationalists were chanting at the interracial, interfaith crowd, you will not replace us. You will not replace us. One of the clergy organizers out in the street later said, originally we were going to stand silently, but the Nazis had been marching past us in these various battalions, cursing and yelling slurs at us. And he said he could feel the energy within his own group, coming from people who hadn't been trained in making peaceful demonstration. And he said he could feel them starting to get amped up in the face of these slurs and threats. He felt like he had to come up with something to change the atmosphere. So he said, I just broke into this little light of mine. In footage from the event, you can hear the Nazis, after the singing starts up, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. And they try to start up another round of, you will not replace us. But it kind of seems like even they could hear how dumb that suddenly sounded in that context. In the face of all this positivity and benevolence being sung with increasing enthusiasm and joy and hopefully benevolence by the crowd that they were there to try to intimidate. As that pastor later said, the tensions went down and it seemed like it kind of shook the Nazis. They didn't know what to do with all that joy. The bottom line, he said, was we weren't going to let the darkness have the last word. Jesus had begun to attract enormous crowds, and he went up a mountain, and in the midst of the crowd, he gathered his disciples close to him. And he said in the hearing of all those who were following him, you are the light of the world. Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Interesting that he would tell them all here in these early days of his ministry that they are the light of the world. That would seem to indicate a heavenly something, an aura had been conferred on them. These are the same brilliantly intuitive crowds that according to John's gospel were miraculously fed. 5,000 families filled from 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then when Jesus told them that all they had to do was believe in him, they went, well, could you give us some kind of sign? These are the same disciples and the same crowds that in Luke are given the parable of the sower of the seeds. And having told it to them in all its majestic and masterfully crafted nuance, Jesus concludes it by crying out, "Let anyone with ears to hear, listen." And the immediate response from the disciples is, "Could you tell us what that means?" It's the same population from whom, according to Mark, Jesus would heal people time after time after time, and he would always conclude by saying, "Now go and tell no one." And of course, the first thing they do every time is go tell everybody in the countryside, town, or village until it said the more he ordered them not to tell anyone, the more zealously they proclaimed it. And then finally in Mark chapter 8, at one point he restored the vision of a blind person and then just said, "Don't even go into the village." That's funny. Thank you. I'll edit the recording later on to make it sound like that was really funny. These are the, these are the people. These are the, this is the level of insight and intelligence and so on and obedience about whom Jesus says now, "You are the light of the world." I remember as an associate pastor standing before a solemn congregation on Good Friday, the most somber day of the Christian year. We had a 7 o'clock a.m. service in that church and a 5 o'clock p.m. service. And I had a meticulously organized notebook in front of me so that I could lead all of the Holy Week services in order with nothing left to chance. As the afternoon service began, after some emotionally charged silence, I rose from my chair and just with great gravity entered the pulpit and said the first line of the responsive call to worship, "O Lord, open my lips," to dead silence. I thought, "What's the matter with you people? Say the response." And from behind me, my friend Steve Mowry, the pastor, said, "This is the 5 o'clock p.m. service." So I turned the page to the right service and I said, "I mean, the Lord be with you. Light of the world. Runs like a well-oiled machine." Thank heaven it's not about how much insight or intelligence you possess or how flawlessly you can contain your joy or how impressively you participate in the worship liturgy. What is the mission? What do we have to do, as they said in John, to work the works of God? How do we shine the light? Isn't this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, undo the thongs of the yoke, let the oppressed go free, break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, cover them and don't hide yourself from your own kin. Then your light, he didn't even say the light of God through you. He said, then your light shall break forth like the dawn. It should probably be said that practically every pastor I know, and I know a few, including myself, has at least one story, usually from early in our ministry when we're still trying to find our way, about having encountered a very needy person and having so embraced the opportunity to help somebody that we have let some of our boundaries collapse and have wound up being severely burned by the experience, taken advantage of or manipulated, sometimes leading to moments or days or weeks or months of headaches or irritation, or I am not exaggerating this, literally mortal dread for the safety of our families or our congregations. We still have to be, as Jesus teaches us in other parables, we still have to be shrewd managers. We have to invest our talents wisely. We have to be watchful servants. Sometimes it takes some learning and some refinement, and sometimes it takes a hard fall or two to learn how to do what God has put us here to do, to be the light of the world in a world that needs all the light that it can get. Recently, a retired political operative and continuing Christian gave an interview in which he spent many minutes excoriating both of our major political parties for all the well-documented reasons that don't need to be listed here. It was a litany of rotten behavior from all sides in the current political climate, and it painted a pretty grim picture. But as he closed his remarks, I'm editing out an extremely unbiblical word. He said, "Falling into despair won't help anyone, though." He said, "I mean, you can curse the darkness, or you can light a candle, and I'm going to get a blankety-blank welding torch." There's a novella by Gabriel Garcia Marquez called No One Writes to the Colonel, where a woman says to the colonel, "You can't eat hope." And the colonel says, "You can't eat it, but it does sustain you." When Jesus told the people following him that they are the light of the world, he had not yet been crucified. He had not yet been raised from death and left behind an empty tomb and appeared again to the disciples. The Spirit had not yet descended on the house full of bereaved and frightened disciples with tongues as of flame and inspired and equipped them to prophesy without limits and become the church. This was way before any of that chronologically. At this point in Matthew's narrative, they are just a ragtag bunch of mystified followers who don't even have an explanation for why they are where they are. To that baffled gathering of local working class laborers, he said unequivocally and without exception, "You are the light of the world." Present tense, right now. Whether or not you aspired to it or asked to be, or God knows whether or not you were born with power or money or good genes or rare intelligence or a winsome personality or a dynamite smile, regardless of any of that, you are the light of the world right now. In the center of St. Paul's Cathedral in London, underneath a gigantic dome, there's a memorial to the architect who designed it, Sir Christopher Wren. And it reads simply in Latin, "Lector si monumentum recries circumspice." Reader, if you require a monument, look around you. You and I are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. When people see the way you shine your light around you, what do you most hope they will see?